Welcome to The Patriot, 1776. Hi, this is John Mady, and I am the pastor of Victory Baptist Church in North Fort Myers, Florida. And who is the Patriot of 1776? You are, and I am. And so is everyone who loves America and wants to follow the principles of our founding fathers. The last sentence of the Declaration of Independence reads like this: "And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." If it had not been for the Patriots of 1776, we would still be paying taxes to England and drinking a spot of tea at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Help us win back America now, just like the Patriots of 1776 won America in the first place. You should take notes and use your Bible. We will give you our mailing address later. Today we're going to start out with the definition of a word. This word is going to be important to us today because we are going to be hearing it quite a few times as we go through today. First of all, the word itself is eugenics. It's spelled E-U-G-E-N-I-C-S. The definition of this word: a human population by controlled breeding to increase the occurrence of desirable heritable characteristics, developed largely by Francis Galton as a method of improving the human race, it fell into disfavor only after the perversion of its doctrines by the Nazis. There are several things about this that we need to know. First of all, Francis Galton was the cousin to Charles Darwin. And so Francis Galton lived around the same time, and Charles Darwin wrote his book, The Origin of the Species, in the year it was published, in the year 1859. That's the first thing we need to know. And they both believed the same way about people outside of white people. You have to remember something that we've already mentioned and talked about, is that the book, The Origin of Species, is a racist book. And so when we talk about The Origin of Species, it's mostly about racism. It's mostly about how to get rid of people who are not white. And so this is really what you can say about the word blackgenocide.org. Now, there's a lot of information. There's a documentary film that's called Mayafa 21, a documentary film. And it's about black genocide in the 21st century America. And actually, 21st century America is not where it got started. It got started back in the 19th and probably long before that. But what we're going to do is to take some information from black genocide. And there's a quote from Pastor Clenard Childress, Jr., and it's probably a pretty accurate quote. "The most dangerous place for an African American is in the womb." And of course, with Margaret Sanger, the thing that we're going to concentrate on today and talk about today is her background and what she is following and what she is doing. And also we're going to learn about her because she started the first abortion clinic in New York City in 1916. Now, she started that abortion clinic, and New York City eliminated that abortion clinic in 3 weeks. And she went to jail for a little bit. And they closed her down, her first abortion clinic, they closed it down, calling it a nuisance to the people. And so, in closing it down, she went to jail for a very short time, just a matter of months, and she got out and started another one in 1921. This one caught on, and this one stayed, and this one grew. And that one that she started in 1921, that one, that abortion clinic, still exists today. And what it's called today is Planned Parenthood. And so as we read about her, Planned Parenthood still has these things that are about her, and they're carrying them on. And black people don't know it. Black people don't understand what the abortion clinics are all about. But let's just start reading, and let's find out just what it is about Margaret Sanger that everyone should know. And so we'll get started, and we will say, quote, and in 1921, article in the Birth Control Review, Sanger wrote, "The most urgent problem today is how to limit and discourage the over-fertility of the mentally and physically defective." Reviewers of one of her 1919 articles interpreted her objectives as more children from the fit, less from the unfit. Again, the question of who decides fitness is important. And it was an issue that Sanger only partly addressed. The undeniable feeble-minded should indeed not only be discouraged, but prevented from propagating their kind, she wrote. Sanger advocated the mandatory sterilization of the insane and feeble-minded. Although this does not diminish her legacy as the key force in the birth control movement, it raises questions much like those now being raised about our nation's slaveholding founders. How do we judge historical figures? How are their contributions placed in context? It is easy to see why there is some empathy, antipathy toward Sanger among people of color, considering that given our nation's history, black people are the people most frequently described as unfit and feeble-minded. Many African-American women have been subject to non-consensual forced sterilization. Some did not even know that they were sterilized until they tried unsuccessfully to have children. In 1973, Essence magazine published an exposé of forced sterilization practices in the rural South, where racist physicians felt they were performing a service by sterilizing black women without telling them. While one cannot blame Margaret Sanger for the actions of these physicians, one can certainly see why Sanger's words are especially repugnant in a racial context. The Planned Parenthood Federation of America has been protective of Margaret Sanger's reputation and defensive of allegations that she was a racist. They correctly point out that many of the attacks on Sanger came from anti-choice activists who have an interest in distorting both Sanger's work and that of Planned Parenthood. While it is understandable that Planned Parenthood would be protective of their founder's reputation, it cannot ignore the fact that Sanger edited the Birth Control Review from its inception until 1929. Under her leadership, the magazine featured articles that embraced the eugenicist position. If Sanger were an anti-eugenics, as Planned Parenthood says she was, she would not have printed as many articles sympathetic to eugenics as she did. Like many modern feminists, Sanger ignored race and class. The article published in the Birth Control Review showed Sanger's empathy with some eugenist views. Margaret Sanger worked closely with W.E.B. Du Bois on her Negro Project, an effort to expose Southern black women to birth control. Mary McLeod, Bethune, and Mary Clayton and Adam Clayton Powell Jr. were also involved in the effort. Much later, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. accepted an award from Planned Parenthood and complimented the organization's efforts. It is entirely possible that Sanger's views evolved over time. Certainly by the late 1940s, she spoke about ways to solve the Negro problem in the United States. This evolution, however commendable, does not eradicate the impact of her earlier statements. What, then, is Sanger's legacy? The Planned Parenthood Federation of America has grown to an organization with 129 affiliates. It operates 875 health centers and serves about 5 million women each year. Planned Parenthood has been a leader in the fight for women's rights to choose in providing access to affordable reproductive health care for a cross-section of women. Planned Parenthood has not supported forced sterilization or restricted immigration and has gently rejected the most extreme of Sanger's views. In many ways, Sanger is no different from contemporary feminists who, after making the customary acknowledgments of issues dealing with race and class, return to analysis that focuses exclusively on gender. These are the feminists who feel that women should come together around women's issues and battle out our differences later. In failing to acknowledge differences and the differential impact of a set of policies, these feminists make it difficult for women to come together. Sanger published the Birth Control Review at the same time that black men returning from World War I were lynched in uniform. That she did not see the harm in embracing exclusionary jargon about sterilization and immigration suggests that she was, at best, socially myopic. There's reason enough to suggest that her leadership was flawed and her legacy crippled by her insensitivity. And so that's one complete one that's in blackgenocide.org. Here's another one. This article appeared January the 20th, 1992 edition of Citizen Magazine. And it starts out, quote, "The Truth About Margaret Sanger: How Planned Parenthood Duped America." At a March 1925 International Birth Control Gathering in New York City, a speaker warned of the menace posed by the black and yellow peril. The man was not a Nazi or Klansman. He was Dr. S. Adolphus Knopf, a member of Margaret Sanger's American Birth Control League, which along with other groups eventually became known as Planned Parenthood. Sanger's other colleagues included avowed and sophisticated racists. One, Lothrop Stoddard, was a Harvard graduate and the author of The Rising Tide of Color Against White Supremacy. Stoddard was something of a Nazi enthusiast who described the eugenic practices of the Third Reich as scientific and humanitarian. And Dr. Harry Laughlin, another Sanger associate and board member for her group, spoke of purifying America's human breeding stock and purging America's bad strains. These strains included the shiftless, ignorant, and worthless class of antisocial whites of the South. Not to be outdone by her followers, Margaret Sanger spoke of sterilizing those she designated as unfit, a plan, she said, would be the salvation of American civilization. And she also spoke of those who were irresponsible and reckless, and among those she included whose religious scruples prevented their exercising control over their numbers. She further contended that there is no doubt in the minds of all thinking people that the procreation of this group should be stopped, that many Americans of African origin constituted a segment of Sanger considered unfit cannot be easily refuted. While Planned Parenthood current apologists try to place some distance between the eugenics and birth control movements, history definitively says otherwise. The eugenic theme figured prominently in the Birth Control Review, which Sanger founded in 1917. She published such articles as Some Moral Aspects of Eugenics, June 1920, The Eugenic Conscience in June of 1921, The Purpose of Eugenics in December of 1924, Birth Control and Positive Eugenics in July of 1925, Birth Control, the True Eugenics in August of 1928, and many other reports that were written in her magazine. These eugenic and racial origins are hardly what most people associate with the modern Planned Parenthood. Federation of America, which gave its Margaret Sanger Award to the late Dr. Martin Luther King in 1966, and whose current president, Faye Waddleton, is black, a former nurse, and very attractive. The PPFA, or the Planned Parenthood Federation of America, is now an established, high-profile, well-funded organization with ample organizational and ideological support in high places of American society and government. Its statistics are accepted by major media and public health officials as gospel. Its full-page ads appear in major newspapers. Its spokespeople are called upon to give authoritative analysis of what America's family policies should be, and to prescribe official answers that congressmen, state legislator, and Supreme Court justices all accept as social orthodoxy. And then they try to blame families. And this is what Sanger did in this next portion. It says, Sanger's obsession with eugenics can be traced back to her own family. One of 11 children, she wrote in the autobiography, My Fight for Birth Control, that I associated poverty, toil, unemployment, drunkenness, cruelty, quarreling, fighting, debts, jails with large families. Such as important was the impression of her childhood of an inferior family status, exasperated by an iconoclastic free-thinking views of her father, whose anti-Catholic attitudes did not make for her for his popularity in a predominantly Irish community. The fact that the wealthy families in her hometown of Corning, New York, had relatively few people, Sanger took as prima facie evidence of the impoverishing effect of larger families. The personal impact of this belief was heightened in 1899 at the age of 48. Sanger was convinced that the ordeals of motherhood had caused the death of her mother. The lingering consumption, tuberculosis, that took her mother's life visited Sanger at the birth of her own first child on November the 18th, 1905. The diagnosis forced her to seek refuge in the Adirondack to strengthen her for the impending birth. Despite the precautions, the birth of baby Grant was agonizing, the mere memory of which Sanger described as mental torture more than 25 years later. She once described the experience as a factor to be reckoned with in her zealous campaign for birth control. From the beginning, Sanger advocacy of sex education reflected her interest in popular control, population control and birth prevention among the unfit. Her first handbook, published for adolescents in 1915 and entitled What Every Boy and Girl Should Know, featuring a jargon afterward. It is a vicious cycle, she wrote. Ignorance breeds poverty, and poverty breeds ignorance. There is only one cure for both, and that is to stop breeding these things. Stop bringing to birth children whose inheritance cannot be one of health or intelligence. Stop bringing into the world children whose parents cannot provide for them. And then it also, this writing also points out her religious bigotry. In the 1910s and 1920s, the entire social order, religion, law, politics, medicine, and the media was arrayed against the idea and practice of birth control. This opposition began in 1873 when an overwhelming Protestant Congress passed and a Protestant president signed into law a bill that became known as the Comstock Law, named after its main proponent, Anthony Comstock. The U.S. Congress classified obscene writing along with drugs and devices and articles that prevented conception or caused abortion under the same net of criminality and forbade their importation or mailing. Sanger set out to have such legislation abolished or amended. Her initial efforts were directed at the Congress with the opening of a Washington, D.C. office of her American Birth Control League in 1926. Sanger wanted to amend Section 211 of the U.S. Criminal Code to allow the interstate shipment and mailing of contraceptives among physicians, druggists, and drug manufacturers, unquote. And so here's the start. We're going to spend some more time talking about Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood, which has been a very big and important part of our country. And so it's just not since 1973 that this kind of thing has been going on. It's been a long, long time. And I want to just go over one more time the definition of eugenics. And this definition says, quote, "The science of improving a human population by controlled breeding to increase the occurrence of desirable heritable characteristics, developed largely by Francis Galton as a method of improving the human race. It fell into disfavor only after the perversion of its doctrines by the Nazis." And so it's pretty easy to see that this thing of eugenics is nothing more than people who are godless people that want to just get rid of people. They want to get rid of the blacks. The latest that I heard in Agenda 21, which we will be going over that later on, but Agenda 21 is a United Nations program, and they want to get the whole world down to a population of 250 million people. So the United States has about 300 million people. So just imagine that we keep the people of the United States and the rest of the world, that they just disappear. And that's how many people that the eugenics world would like to have, because people are destroying the world. And so, remembering that Francis Galton, who started this method of improving the human race, was a cousin to Charles Darwin. And the more that you get into these things, the easier it is to see how there are people today who are just following in the footprints of Charles Darwin and Francis Galton. After Margaret Sanger, we're going to be looking at two more people. One of them is Roger Baldwin, and he was a communist. He's the one that started a program in 1920 with some communist friends and attorneys, and they started a program, and it still exists today. And because of what they want to accomplish, they want to destroy America. Their program today will be a tremendous surprise to you. The other man that we're going to be talking about, last of all, will be Saul Alinsky. And it says on the back of his book, Alinsky's Techniques and Teachings Influence Generations of Community and Labor Organizers. And two of those people were Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. So comes the end of today's message. We appreciate so much that you spent time to be with us. If you enjoy our program, would you please take time to send us any questions you might have, along with a love offering of any amount? And if you send at least $25, we will send you a 92-page book, When Good Men Do Nothing, Who Will Speak? Our address is The Patriot, 1776, at 14505 Nathan Hale Lane, North Fort Myers, Florida, 33917. Again, The Patriot, 1776. The address is 14505 Nathan Hale Lane, North Fort Myers, Florida, 33917. Talk to you again next time. Goodbye now.